In a world where action films are dumped in theaters and TV, dead on arrival.
I can't go on living this lie!
You need a hero.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
You need a helper.
Hello, nothing to see here.
You need a healer.
That is affirmative.
You need...
We're on the air.
Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy.
Yes, well, here we are, the Valentine's Day Massacre episode of Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy with me, Professor Rick, and with my usual co-host. Identify yourself by voices, please.
Hi, my name is Jen, and I run a site called animationcomplex.com.
Jen, no last name.
Hey.
Well, you didn't say your last name. So it's Jen Lowe, last name. And?
I'm Miko.
No last name.
One of the animation...
Quite you.
Animators at working at Blue Sky Studios.
You know these guys if you listen to this thing at all. And we also have our wonderful, magnificent webmaster.
Hi.
No Mike. Name at all.
No name at all.
I'm gonna be real unique.
Yes. Ghostbusters
sucked.
Yes, yes. Well, we know Ghostbusters sucked, but not necessarily for the personal reasons that you elucidated in a previous podcast. But in any case, what do you want
to... is going to prison.
Oh, well, here we go. And we saw three movies together. All of us saw them at different times, but we all saw them. No, we didn't. There was one that we didn't see. So what do you want to start with? One that we saw or one that I just saw?
I think you can start with the one you saw.
I figured. And you can comment
the
on...
The one that we refused to see.
There we go. And can everyone guess what that is? Why did you refuse to see it, Jen?
Whitewashing.
Ah, and why did you refuse to see it, Miko?
Because I'm Chinese.
There we go. And I am both white and a great love of Chinese cinema, so I had to see it because it was directed by one of my favorite directors, not just of China, but of the entire world. It is a movie called The Great Wall, which should have been called The Not-So-Great Wall, or The Okay Wall, or The Whitewashed Wall, even better, The Whitewashed Wall, and was directed by Zhang Yimou, who made two of my favorite movies of all time, which were Hero and To Live, but he also was one of the great, he's one of the great Chinese filmmakers, he's one of the great filmmakers, period. He made Red Sorghum, Raise the Red Lantern, The Road Home, so many great movies, but now he's stuck in the same situation as virtually every other Chinese filmmaker. He has to deal with a government.
So would you say he's become a sellout with this film?
No, it's not a sellout. When you're Chinese and you're working in the film business, mm-hmm. you're kind of forced by circumstances because the government has like total control over your life and work and art
mm-hmm. yes.
to do what you have to do. And so all the great Chinese filmmakers are in this situation now. It's even worse for the Hong Kong filmmakers because they lived for many, many years under the British government and they had freedom to make what films they wanted.
That's true.
And then when 1997 happened and the lease went back to the Chinese government, then they were not only forced to make the two kinds of films that seem to be popular to the Chinese government nowadays, which are what I called EATS films, E-A-T-S, which I say stands for Everything and the Kitchen Sink, or NAP films, which is N as in Nancy, A as in Apple, P as in Peter, which means not absolutely propaganda, but really it is propaganda.
Mr. Myers?
Yes.
I have a question.
What's that, Mr. Mike?
Was he forced at gunpoint to put Matt Damon in this so he could get financing from
America? No.
Because why would, if he's such a great Chinese director, why would he pick Matt Damon?
He didn't pick Matt Damon. What happens in many films nowadays... No. There's a wonderful show... That's very good. There's a wonderful show on the Sundance Channel called Hollywood Reporter Close-Up, or Close-Up with the Hollywood Reporter, where they talk to round tables of actors, actresses, directors, writers, documentary filmmakers.
Yeah.
But they did one on producers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an awesome one because it told you what producers do. And what producers do is they make the film. The director does not create the film. For the most part, in many cases, in the majority of cases, I dare say, the director is hired just like anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is when you're somebody like Zhang Yimou, who has made great films, and he loves filmmaking and he does great filmmaking, you want to keep working. If you're Spielberg or whatever, Scorsese, you want to keep working. And so you have to deal with the circumstances the way they are. I mean, Zhang Yimou's movie To Live was about a normal Chinese family living through 50 years of Chinese history and what effect that had on them. Something that, you know, all the most people make movies about the big circumstances. He made a movie about how a family was affected by big circumstances. So he's well aware of this stuff. Now he's being affected by big circumstances. One of the things that's fun about The Great Wall is if you're a student of Zhang Yimou's films like I am, you're able to see pieces of his films even in something as mediocre as The Great Wall. The other thing that I found extremely humorous about The Great Wall was the publicity that was trying to get over the controversy of it being whitewashed by having Matt Damon in it, where they were saying, oh, but Matt Damon plays a very stupid character who's constantly being shown up by the glorious and wise and capable Chinese. As a person who actually saw the movie, I can tell you that is absolute bullcrap.
I do feel like if the movie would have been made in China,
yeah,
with the Chinese cast, majority Chinese cast, and
it was.
It was.
Yeah.
But if the movie would have been made in China and released towards Chinese audience, mm-hmm, that would have been the case. The McDamon's character would be someone who's relatively an anti-hero.
Well, apparently,
it's like The Last Samurai, just like, oh, even yes, that's like,
right,
a whole
but,
other.
But
problem.
Since it's going to release in the U.S. sort of the Western world has to be sort of, yeah, that savior, yeah, role,
which
in
is
this
so
film.
Annoying because you have films like Letters from Iwo Jima and you have films like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which prove that like, If a good film, a good story will persist.
Well,
so, like, that's what annoys me about this, all of this, because it's
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is a Taiwanese movie, who still haven't been taken over by China yet.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting problem that we're having with The Great Wall is that, yes, the cast and the crew and the filming was in China, but the writers were English. The stunt coordinator, even though his name is Hiro Koda, worked his last job was on Girl Meets World on the Disney Channel.
Oh man,
and,
not that.
Yeah,
Girl Meets World was a national treasure.
Yes, that's right, and it was been canceled. And Buster Reeves, who worked on Jason Bourne and The Accountant and Warcraft and Legend of Tarzan,
the writer wrote The Sorcerer's Apprentice and Prince of Persia. That's
yes,
all you needed to know.
That's
to know
right.
A bad movie.
That's right. When I saw his name is Carlo Bernard, who wrote The Sorcerer's Apprentice and Prince of Persia.
So
Doug Miro also worked on The Sorcerer Apprentice and Prince of Persia. He also worked on the script of The Great Wall. So my question is if there's another cut for China, because it's apparently doing well in China.
Really?
Yeah, but anything does well in China because they have 25,000 theaters.
That's true.
And people have to go see things. And also because Jackie Chan has taught me that the Chinese audience really loves it when they're able to show up or use an American actor. You know,
yes,
they feel
American actors still plays very well in Chinese audience with the Chinese audience. I'm kind of surprised that none of the stunt coordinators are from China.
China. Yeah, me too. I was
very
amazed
surprised
by that. The fight coordinator was Newell Sun, who is a specialist in American movie reshoots. All of these people are not, you know, very, very veterans. And the fight arranger is a guy named Vincent Wong.
What's a fight arranger?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? It's the difference between executive producer, associate producer, mm-hmm, assistant producer, producer, production, yeah, whatever. They can trade these things off. The fight coordinator could be one thing. The fight arranger could be something else, especially since, you know, the fight coordinator, he probably got that credit because he's a specialist in reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
And the fight arranger was probably the main guy. However, the other point I wanted to make is that one of the great disappointments for me as an action film lover is that The Great Wall was all mocap and green screen and visual effects. You know, whatever there was no hand to hand stuff. Mm-hmm. It was hand to claw. It was, you know, face to monster.
Oh, because it was against the monster.
Yeah, this is all
I saw the thing where they had like the different sections of the army split up. They had like,
yeah,
a Falcon team, you know, a,
yeah,
dragon team, whatever. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, any possible any way that they tried to elevate this movie for me instantly died when they like created little teams, because,
yep,
then it was like you had to like introduce each section and each team, and it was like different colors, and it was like Power Rangers.
If only they did.
No, a lot of good Chinese war movies had introductions of different teams with, mm-hmm, different
purposes
and yeah. different purposes.
But it just seemed really campy in the trailer for this. Like, it felt like a Power Rangers trailer with Matt Damon coming to save the day.
But this is not... But that's exactly what it is. There are good Chinese movies of this nature, of wuxia and of wushu and of kung fu, and there are not so good ones, and The Great Wall was a not so good one, especially because the mix didn't work. This movie was kind of hilarious.
So they didn't even fight?
They did fight, but they fought against mocap, which is motion capture characters, and against green screen and against CGI, against mm-hmm. computer graphics. They weren't going against each other. They were going against these really superficial...
Were they quadrupeds? What were they even like? Were they like reptiles?
Well, they were a combination of things.
Komodo dragon.
Things. They're Komodo dragon type of looking things.
So they're like Japanese in some sense.
And they were, and they also could have switched them out with virtually anything. They could have switched them out with zombies. Mm-hmm. They could have switched them out with anything. Mm-hmm. They were called, I think, Tan Tao, and they had a 30-second explanation as to what they were and where they came from.
Yeah, where did they come from?
They came from a meteor, apparently.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And they show up every some like 30 or 300 or 600 or 60 or 4 years.
So what I'm hearing is franchise potential.
Well, no, not after this. But it very much...
A modern day update.
This was The Last Emperor, where Tom Cruise saved Japan, a lone white guy saving Japan. This was a lone white guy with a bad Irish accent mm-hmm. saving China.
He had an Irish accent?
He had it, well, occasionally.
Oh, was that like he was from Ireland?
Every once in a while.
He ended up
in
China?
They were all trying to get to China because they had heard about the black powder.
Black powder.
They wanted to get gunpowder because they'd heard about it. The whole movie, they also had William Dafoe in it. As a guy who came originally to get black powder. But the funniest thing about this is that here we have the Great Wall that was supposedly created to keep the Tan Tiao out, right? And so, but every 30 or 4 or 6 or 600 or whatever it was years, the Tan Tiao come and assail the wall. And so they had at least 4 years, but I'm pretty sure it was more like 30 or 300. It was some really good amount of time to prepare mm-hmm. to defend the wall.
Right.
And what they came up with was the Power Rangers, but the Power Rangers weren't effective. There was a group of women in blue armor, mm-hmm. really form-fitting Wonder Woman blue armor, with spandex or latex blue leggings, and their job was to walk out onto these hand-shaped planks, basically, although they were beautifully inlaid metal planks. Somebody had worked very hard on these planks that they put out there, mm-hmm. and they put a big ring, a big metal ring around their waists, attached to a bungee cord, basically, and they would jump off. When the Tan Tiao was attacking, they would jump off, and their job was to like sort of stab at the Tan Tiao while bouncing amongst them. And there's a moment in the movie where one of them gets clearly leaped upon because these Tan Tiao are really good and they jump high, would grab them and they would eat them and they would destroy them and they rip them apart. And there was a shot of this guy at the top whose only job was to collect the metal rings, the now bloody metal rings, and make a big pile of them.
Recycle.
Yes. And it's like, why? And I was sitting in the audience going, and I was waiting for Matt Damon to go, why are you even doing this? Mm-hmm. This seems to be the most ludicrous thing you could do.
So no one said anything about that.
No. And instantly, one of the very first things that Matt Damon does is he realizes if you hit them in the eye with an arrow, they'll die. If you hit them in the eye with an arrow, they'll die.
I mean, you can learn that like having a slingshot at a squirrel.
Yeah. Now, they've been doing this for decades, apparently. And they hadn't figured out what this guy figures out
Moral
immediately.
Of the story, Chinese people are stupid.
That's what the movie's saying.
Okay. Also, it's inferior because the...
gets worse.
I saw it on the trailer, which is pretty good action shot of the general shooting the arrow, hitting a coin or something onto a pillar.
That was Matt Damon. Matt Damon did that.
And then Matt Damon shot another arrow that split his arrow.
They cut that out. They cut that out of the American cut. That's why I think there's a Chinese cut.
Okay.
I bet there's a Chinese cut where Matt Damon is an
idiot.
Americans have seen that so many times.
That's actually a folktale, sort of semi of a folktale in Chinese where it happens in every single movie with archery where if you hit another man's archer, split it.
That's here too, but we also have Mythbusters over here.
That's true.
But I bet you there are two cuts on that basis because
it might be.
This whole movie is Matt Damon is a genius, and all the Chinese are idiots.
Well, no, that's not true, because they've, like, even, like, look at Rogue One. Like, look at how the trailer for Rogue One had so many shots that, like, they reshot
true.
So much of the film.
However, the one he's talking about is a shot where the Chinese does something cool.
Yeah.
And in this movie, the Chinese do nothing cool.
Yeah.
They're just idiots. You know, this general you're talking about,
right.
he gets wounded in a ridiculous ambush by these monsters that he should have seen a mile away.
Wait, the
30 miles away, yeah.
Ambush? Are they, like, not smart, but... Like,
yeah, they're smart.
Okay.
They're nests. They're hive minds. They're like ants.
Mm-hmm.
They're like hive minds. Oh. And so they're being run by a single queen who, of course, Matt takes out at the end. Because he's awesome and everybody else is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So the head general gets killed. So what does he do? He gives the job of being the general and leading the entire army against this enemy to the girl, to this young girl, not to his higher-ranking generals, just to this girl. And the girl is so mentally constipated, it's amazing. It's like, you know, you are going to betray us. And Matt Damon's going, you know, look what I've just done. I just saved your country a couple of times. You're going to betray us. And she's always so petulant and pouty. And it's like, okay, that's enough. Anyway, so Zhang, but it is fun to see just on the basis.
Do you really mean that?
I do. It is fun to see.
How good is the CG?
I think you just feel
it's
bad.
Mediocre.
You just want other
it's
people
mediocre.
To suffer.
No, it's
like
just,
Gods of Egypt.
I love Zhang Yimou.
Not surprising the stunt coordinator has done Warcraft, because from
yeah,
what you were saying.
And Legend of Tarzan and Account.
Like just fighting,
Jason Bourne.
You're just fighting green monsters.
You're just doing
Street
nothing.
Monsters.
Yeah, you're just doing nothing. And but Zhang Yimou, it's fun to see. I said, I'm going, oh, that's Curse of the Golden Flower. He's borrowing from that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there is he is borrowing from his opening ceremonies for the Beijing Olympics, which he also directed.
Mm-hmm.
So he borrows all sorts of things. But I feel so bad for him, and I like him so much. I'm happy he got the job. And I'm hoping he does something better in the future, but it's hard to figure that out. So that's the Great Wall. The Great Wall is not great. Hero's amazing. He's done a bunch of classics. All I can tell you is don't see Great Wall. Go look at his filmography. Choose any other movie and enjoy it, because he's really, really awesome. So now we have two that we have all seen, including Mike.
I haven't seen the second.
Oh, you didn't see that. Oh, so what do you want to do? You want to do, John,
let's do this one.
Yeah, Batman Lego, the Lego Batman movie, is the one that we've all seen, and also has less direct action that we can talk about in a revolutionary way.
Yeah, I kind of was wondering how we were going to handle this one.
Well, because that's why it's so great to have you guys here, because, of course, Lego Batman is animated.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's directed by the guy who got his chops on Robot Chicken. His name is Chris McKay.
Says it all.
That's right,
says
on Adult Swim on Cartoon Network.
The jokes are definitely there.
Yeah, the joke. Well, all the jokes and the
just the general, the pacing, the sense of humor, the absurdity.
Jen, you're a story person at Blue Sky Studios, right?
Yeah.
So, Lego Batman was written by Seth Graham Smith, mm-hmm. who wrote Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, both the novel and the screenplay.
I was like,
Chris McKenna, who did a lot of work for the
Community,
the television show.
Yeah.
Eric Summers, who worked on Marry Me and Happy Endings, those two really great shows with Ken Marino and other people. Very funny. Jared Stern, which surprised me, because Jared Stern is the creator of Dr. Ken, the ABC TV show with Ken Jeong,
hmm. okay.
who was also on Community.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how this happened. I'm guessing that a guy named John Whittington wrote an idea for a Lego Batman movie, which they then bought and then turned into a screenplay.
You know, not for nothing, he could just be related to somebody. But I don't even mean that in a mean way.
Yeah, but it's his first job.
But that's what I'm saying,
it's his very first job.
Such a high-profile job.
Yeah. So Lego,
it happens a lot in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, nepotism's rampant, but sometimes it actually does work out.
But for whatever reason, it's his first job, but they put together a chock-a-block, lovely homage to Batman, the entire history of Batman.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, oh, yeah.
Man, they, like, skewered and loved it at the same time.
That was so cool.
Like, right up my alley. Yeah.
That was one of my favorite parts.
Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm sorry, we have to do our little theme song. There'll be spoilers. We want the movies to be better, so there will be spoilers. Thank you. Okay, now, yes, but they did it with they did it in a loving way, though.
Mm-hmm.
They skewered in a loving way.
I like this more than the Lego movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I think this one is more, since they're focus, it's on Lego Batman. It's on Batman. So they didn't really have to go into that human element of emotion in there. This is just tons of fun with good storytelling. The pacing.
There you go. The good for storytelling. What about the pacing?
I think that in the middle, some of the jokes for me at least run kind of dry when they're sort of. Play that loneliness of him. I think that part it's just half of a shot too long.
You guys are the technical guys, but I was utterly delighted, not just because it was a fun, frantic movie, but because it was a DC Comics Warner Brothers major motion picture that was clearly not interfered with the way all their other recent ones have been. And in fact, when I put out a little Facebook review to that effect, one of the producers, somebody I think you know too, Michael, gave me a thumbs up. Sort of like saying, yeah, that's right, we weren't screwed with. The Warner Brothers executives didn't come in and said, oh, I think you should, you know, we should have three competing cuts of the film.
Well,
and then do a diluted version.
Yeah, I think that's why it works. Like, because I was thinking, like, if they tried to do this in any other, like, if they tried to do this in the style of, like, the DC animated films, like, it would not, like, it only works because it's Lego, and it's because they established that style and that type of animation.
Well, and, I also like, established
and then, like,
Batman's
in the Lego
character.
Movie, I was gonna say, yeah, in the opening, it wasn't even the opening shot. It was literally like the opening credit roll when they show all the like the 15 seconds of logos, and then they have like the same names of the companies over it in text where he's like sitting there and he's just like making fun of them all and commenting on them all.
Deadpool had a lot to do with the approach of this film, I'm sure, because it starts with it. They break the fourth wall immediately. Will Arnett's Batman, he does the voice of this Batman character, is well aware this is a movie. And he establishes, and when they show the entire history of the cinematic and television Batman during the film twice. I mean, they show Adam West, a live action shot of Adam West. They refer to it constantly. All of the different Batmans, as well as all of the different Jokers. And this is not just about Batman, it's about the entire DC universe. Virtually every major DC Comics character is in the movie.
Yes, and I love that they started with a bang. They started with Batman single-handedly took care of every single villain that was going to destroy the city.
And the one thing that I was a little disappointed that the Justice League did not come back to help him at the end of the film.
I liked that.
That was my issue, where in the beginning, the reason why they have to get the Phantom Projector was that Superman sent,
Zod.
Zod into the Phantom Zone.
They planted that seed.
They planted
super
that
early.
Seed, but when all the villain came out to the world to sort of help Joker, he wasn't there. And I was just a bit disappointed that if he's been sent there, he's the only reason why Batman got that information to get the Phantom Projector.
Like if you need the exposition to talk about the Phantom Projector and then you name drop Zod and then you don't have Zod, it's kind of like, what?
Right.
And I get why they didn't have him. Because he's not a main Batman villain, but it's still like, but Voldemort was there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I loved all the in-jokes. There were so many in-jokes. And also, just on the voices, there were in-jokes. Alfred, the butler, is voiced by Ralph Fiennes. But Voldemort, who Ralph Fiennes played, didn't do the voice. And they got Eddie Izzard, which was a great voice. And they got Billy Dee Williams back to play Two-Face, a part he never got to play.
It was so weird.
Because he was Harvey Dent in the original Batman. Yeah.
In this, like, even like the, like, Catwoman was Zoe Kravitz. And the Flash was Adam Devine. And it was just
And
like,
the Joker was Zach Galifianakis.
Even
Bane was Doug Benson. They just had a lot of fun with it, and the fun came into the audience as well. It was hard not to have fun with this.
No, it was really fun because there's a one point where they make fun of Suicide Squad, but at the end of the movie, all the bad guys came over and helped them achieve their goal. So in some sense, they were making fun of what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And that was...
And also, since anybody who knows comics knows what the Joker does to Barbara Gordon in The Killing Joke, it added a certain layer of, like, we're going to have fun here. We're not going to get into the dark crap.
Yeah, I kind of, at first, I kind of like, in initially when I saw the movie and, like, the Joker was introduced and they basically set them up as, like, a feuding couple.
Right.
I was kind of just like, I have really mixed feelings about this because, like, you murdered a Robin and you paralyzed a girl and you're a terrible person.
Right.
That's... And, like, I was kind of just like, I had, like, a moment of, like, where I just, like, needed to separate the two.
And then I said, okay, you made your decision. I'll go with it because this is so much fun.
Yeah,
and I prefer this to that, because Batman by nature, Superman by nature, is totally unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you tell the audience that Superman is an alien and therefore cannot be perceived by humans in the same way another human would be perceived, then the glasses make sense. But they've never done that. They've just said that when he takes off his glasses, nobody knows Superman is Clark Kent, which is, of course, nonsense. So to do the kind of thing they've done, and here's Batman, where you see the lower half of his face, and you instantly know, oh, that's Bruce Wayne. Of course that's Bruce Wayne. He looks just like Bruce Wayne.
Right.
And so to introduce these realistic things mm-hmm. into a comic book milieu with... specifically the Joker killing a Robin and doing horrible things to Barbara Gordon in The Killing Joke, that I don't like, because they don't fit. It doesn't work for me, because one is total unreality and the other one is a very dark, ugly reality. And also there's no compensation, because even though they're basically saying Batman is insane, he's not so insane that he doesn't understand that eliminating the Joker would just be common sense,
mm-hmm.
would just be
right.
mm-hmm.
public safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was so happy that Jack Nicholson's Joker dies mm-hmm. in the Michael Keaton Batman movie, which is still one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, let's get back to Batman logo, and another reason I love having you guys on the podcast, because you guys work in animation. So I'm watching this movie, and I'm enjoying it, and I'm understanding the action.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're limited because they're Legos.
Right.
They cannot bend the same way that model animators can.
Right.
But even so, this was a fun, exciting movie.
Yeah, because they're very rigid, but they managed to establish, like, a style in the movement that's still really fluid.
Yeah, I think they really did a good job.
It looks so much fun to work on. Like, it looks really annoying when, like, they were first probably, like, they probably, you know, obviously they probably teched it all out for Lego Movie. And they probably had to figure out, oh, like, well, what happens? Like, how do they do this when, like, their hands can't do anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even, like, when Batman took, I was like, when he takes his cowl off and, like, his hair, like...
And it pops
it,
off.
It, like, pops into,
yeah.
like, one...
Into a bouffant.
Pose, and then it pops into a second one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, little things
well,
like
he had,
that.
He had the mashed down hair because of the cowl.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
it pops,
yeah.
pops free.
Yeah, it pops free.
Yeah.
And it pops between two poses.
Mm-hmm.
Animalogic did the bit Lego and Lego Movie and Lego Batman. So with them, I think the first movie, they were trying to figure things out. So the first movie, the animation was great, but it wasn't there for the action. They won't be able to do that back then.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the short that we all saw in front of...
Storks.
Yeah.
Where they did...
Like Jackie Chan.
The Jackie Chan.
The Ninjago.
Ninjago.
And they also had a preview for the Ninjago movie, Lego movie, which is coming up,
mm-hmm.
Before I saw the Batman Lego movie. And again, they have very specific choreography in that, so
right.
I'm looking forward to talking about that on a future podcast.
So that's when they really get a sense of how to do quick movement. Because
mm-hmm.
for this one, for Lego Batman, they really have to have convey that Batman's, it's really quick.
Mm-hmm.
He's quick on his feet. He can pull out all kinds of gadgets from his back. And so they are able to sort of using different shapes of Lego, because they can't do blur frames, they can't do motion blur. So what they can do is they kind of cheat using smear frames, which is a 2D animation style that we do, and they were able to use Legos, different pieces of Legos. So for example, when Batman zigs to another place, all they have is a Lego. It's a black piece of Lego and a yellow piece of Lego in the middle, and that was it. And that would show his speed.
Mm-hmm.
So they were able to get all of those techniques from the Ninjago
mm-hmm.
short. They were able to incorporate all the techniques that they have and enhance it in this film.
They have a lot of they stand the test of good action films that I've already set out, and I'll be happy to repeat because we're going to deal it with our next film as well, which is you can watch it repeatedly. because there's something to find every time you watch it.
Right.
I mean, I will be delighted to see this movie again, and even slow motion certain things to see if somebody's fighting in character, because most of it is equipment-based. Mm-hmm. It's bat plane and bat helicopter and bat everything. But all the villains are from all the these different movies, which was awesome, including Daleks, who they couldn't say were Daleks because there was a rights issue, because Terry Nation's estate owns the name the Daleks, but they're in the movie, and guys from Lord of the Rings are in the movie, and Voldemort's in the movie, and everybody's in the movie, and they're all fighting, and it's all very exciting and very colorful, but it was so fast and furious, if you'll excuse the expression, because that's another movie we'll be dealing with soon. I couldn't get specific, but I do know that I enjoyed it immensely, and I look forward to seeing it again, and I recommend it. Now, let's get... Do you have anything to say about that, Mike?
I liked it.
He liked it. Mikey liked it. Hey, Mikey. All right, another company's going to sue us. What's that? What?
There was a number of rewrites in that movie, though.
Yes.
There were 5 different scripts that are out there.
Ooh, really?
Wow.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm not surprised. Well, they had more than 5 writers, so I wouldn't surprise me.
There were a number of rewrites, but I thought it was very good.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. But it wasn't interfered with in terms of the way that... Well, apparently all the Suicide Squad and Batman v Superman and all that stuff.
In fact, there's no murder in the Lego universe.
Right.
And there's no sex.
Yeah. Well, they don't have the equipment.
No, there's no sex. No, you just simply look at each other with hearts over your head. That's
and that works for me.
And it keeps into that realm because Batman is still a master builder.
Yes.
He was able to make things while he's falling in from the building. He was able to make things. To take off. He was able to make that cat looking
I was surprised mechanic. That there wasn't any more references to that. I thought they would sneak in some sneaky something about wild style, like the girl that he meets or something.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that would interfere with Barbara Gordon.
Well, they still have sort of that world that where if you fall down into the hole and you become...
Yeah.
And apparently Batman will be in the next Lego movie.
Well, that's also why, because I was kind of they're doing another one, and he was such a scene stealer in that,
And
that's the only reason this movie happened was because that was everybody's favorite character.
First try.
And also Ninjago is happening.
The most quotable guy in the movie,
yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Most quotable.
But that John Wick.
Well, John
How
Wick,
about that John
Chapter
Wick?
2. Well, that brings me to an interesting story. The only reason you're hearing this podcast right now is because of John Wick 1. I saw John Wick 1 with Stephen Watson, World Heavyweight Tai Chi champion, Push Hands Champion, and we were flabbergasted by how not as good as it should have been it was. It wasn't bad, it just wasn't as good as it should have been, because here we have a movie that establishes a character known as the Boogeyman, who completed this seemingly impossible assassination mission, and then he's attacked by 12 faceless guys in masks, and he sucks. He's not a good fighter. He's just not that good.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the movie, even though there's a lot of action scenes, he still remains not very good. He gets captured, he gets beat up, he gets wounded. He doesn't change his approach in the slightest. He is a blunt instrument who's seemingly incapable of thought, which resulted in blunt, seemingly incapable of invention fight scenes. So I was astonished by it because it was directed apparently by 2 guys who ran a really great, I think they're called 8-7, we'll put it in the supplementals. It was directed by 2 guys who were always under the power and influence of the director. They worked on other movies as fight coordinators and stunt coordinators, but they had to do what the director told them to do, so they weren't able to do what they wanted to do. So here they got their own movie, John Wick, where they should have been able to do what they wanted to do. Then apparently they wanted to do the exact same crap. The exact same crap. It's still kind of dull and weary and endless and not smart and not clever. They did a couple of minorly clever things in John Wick 1. He shoots a guy in the foot at one point, but that's about it. He doesn't get smart at all. So John Wick Chapter 2, it made enough money around the world, John Wick Part 1. So that's when I decided to make this podcast after John Wick to be able to look at the movies and take them apart. And I want to still, at some point, go back to one of the major fight scenes in John Wick 1 and, with a video podcast, completely redo it. Have me and my kung fu friends redo the fight scene and show you how to make it more exciting, more involving, more engaging, more everything, more emotional. And yeah, but the bottom line is more exciting. So here comes John Wick, Chapter 2. I've heard great things about it. A guy named Chad Stahelski, who also was the stunt coordinator and fight choreographer of Master of Tai Chi, which I think you all know if you read, if you go to my website, I did not like, because there was, it should have been called Master of Martial Arts, because there's virtually no Tai Chi in it. And it's, again, all blunt force, everybody fighting exactly the same endlessly kind of movie. But he apparently had fun, and Derek Kolstad, who wrote the first one, also wrote this one. Everybody seemed, they seemed to have more money. They certainly had a bigger cast.
Yes.
They had a wonderful cast of actors, just all sorts of surprises and fun, really good actors in this movie. And the fight coordinator was Jonathan I had this problem before. His name is Jonathan Eusebio, which is Eusebio. He was the fight coordinator on Doctor Strange, which you know I loved. Mm-hmm. And the stunt coordinator was Mark Dusudi, who did Arrival, The Walk, and Smurfs 2, of all things. Huh. So here we have John Wick Chapter 2, which is a two-hour-long movie with, as far as I can tell, about 90 minutes of action. There was There's a lot of action in this. And it's immediately better than John Wick 1. However, it is also very, very heavily influenced by the Hong Kong work of John Woo. The opening battle, which is basically a car joust, is pretty much directly from the ending of a movie called Bullet in the Head, which I would recommend. And there's a lot of things in this movie from a gun standpoint. There are some hand-to-hand, but it's almost all mixed martial arts and ground fighting. But still decently done. But the gun stuff is all from John Woo's A Better Tomorrow Part 1 and 2, The Killer and Hard Boiled, which, again, if you haven't seen that, listener, go out immediately and get it somehow. These were all Hong Kong movies that had subtitles. I don't know if any were dubbed. I know that Criterion put out a couple of them. In versions that may not be available anymore. But they're all awesome and very, I mean, I wouldn't call this John Woo light. I'd call it John Woo heavy because it was heavily influenced, but to its own benefit. The plot, simplicity itself. John Wick is being forced to carry out an assassination because he put in this chit. One of the best things about the John Wick series is they've created this literal underworld of the criminal element.
The world building in this movie is so much better than the first one. They really delve into, they have their own currency, their own sort of rules, their own sort of safe zones, the Continentals in Rome and the hotel in New York. Which was in the first one, yeah.
And that's all their safe zones.
And they have systems to sort of relay that, like, crucial information to all the gangsters, I guess.
It's sort of like a very civilized, steampunk-oriented alternate universe that exists in our own.
And I like the fact that their way of relating the information, it's somewhat of a old-school type of technology, so it's not... It's not as traceable.
Yeah, these people, you know, the network are all dressed like 1940s characters in a 1940 movie, using rotary phones and typewriters, except they're all tattooed and pierced.
Oh, yeah.
So,
the mix is really cool.
Well, it's all super cool and super interesting, but this is 2 hours of one brutal battle scene after another that individually work pretty well.
Yeah.
They're pretty cool. I mean, it stands up to the repeated watching rule.
Definitely.
To guys. I mean, what is the word I'm looking for? The repeated watching rule, where you can watch it and you'll see something new. And everybody, there's a massive amount of stunt people. Keanu Reeves was clearly doubled in a couple of shots, but also he was clearly not doubled in a couple of others.
He was doing a lot of his own stunts as
he
well,
was.
Which is surprising.
He's got some martial arts, but it's martial arts, it's not kung fu. And again, he's still John Wick, which means he's not changing his approach. In fact, the whole climax of the movie is based on his inability to think freely.
Pretty much. He's stuck in that world.
Yeah. His attitude, that was the thing that you didn't like about it, Mike, that at least that you mentioned to me, that John Wick did something. He executes somebody in a place that he's not supposed to execute, and he knows he's not supposed to because it'll ruin everything. But by that time, given what he's done in the rest of the film, which was kill one person after another, but he does it well, He's constantly shooting people in the head. He
finished his job.
Yeah, he does chest, head, chest. He's laser intensive on doing that. But by the end of the movie, I was certain that he was the anti-death. In that, death comes looking for you. If you want to be killed by anti-death, you have to come looking for him. And his idea is that his car is destroyed, his wife is dead, or the woman he loves is dead, right. His dog is dead. He should be dead, he wants to be dead. But like so many samurai, like one of the great samurai series is called Son of Black Mass, Kirishira Namori, the Son of Black Mass. He spends his whole time trying to find somebody good enough to kill him, because he's too proud to kill himself.
That's true.
And so John Wick, I was going, clear samurai situation. He's waiting for someone to kill him. He wants to die. He wants to join his dog, his car, and that phone in the in the afterworld. As a matter of fact, at one point in the movie, somebody mentions Hades and about being doomed and about being,
right.
Being cursed to hell. So I didn't mind the fact that he did something stupid. In fact, I expected him to do nothing less, because he is nihilistic on the one hand and also somewhat suicidal on the other, except he won't kill himself.
Yeah, he's definitely in the path of self-destruction.
Yeah. And that's how the movie ends a lot like Luke Cage does in that the whole movie is a circle jerk. He's no further along than he was at the beginning. In fact, he's kind of behind himself. He's kind of screwed up. But I kind of love that ending now. I was talking, we were going to do the podcast, record the podcast yesterday, right after we saw John Wick 2. And then we decided not to, because one of the reasons was I wanted it to sink into me. I wanted to think more about it. And the more I thought about it, the better I liked it. Because that ending is quintessential John Wick. He has set up a situation where there's absolutely no way he can survive. And that's what he wants.
Right.
But there is a way he's going to survive, supposedly, in John Wick Chapter 3. Yeah, as he tells somebody, understand something. If they come after me, I am going to kill them.
Doesn't matter who, doesn't matter where. I will kill them.
The only thing I didn't want him to do is what he does at the end, which is run. He starts to run, and he starts to look panicked. But that also kind of makes sense, because he's still human.
Right.
Not really. But
I think one of the good things about this film is that it started with him being still rusty. Because in the first film, like you said, he was rusty throughout the film. He didn't change. He didn't do anything better. But with this film, he did get better as it went on. So you feel more that, he did retire, and he was sort of getting rusty, and now he's slowly getting back into it.
Well, but he got pretty good into it. I mean, they refer to this mission that he does, this impossible mission. At least at the end of this movie, I understand how he was able to do it.
Right.
And also, they showed you, somebody mentions at the beginning of the movie, they said, you know, a guy who kills three people with a pencil. And he does it later in the film.
Yeah, he does.
He shows you in the subway. By the way, the filming of this movie is awesome. It's in Rome and it's in New York. And it's on location in Rome and New York.
Cinematography was beautiful.
It's amazing. They have scenes at Lincoln Center. They have scenes in the PATH subway. They have scenes all over town.
The lighting was fantastic.
Was fantastic. There are some extremely clever fight scenes right out of John Woo when the actor, Common, who plays a bodyguard of the target that John Wick had, are shooting at each other in the subway in such a way that nobody else in the subway knows what's going on.
Right.
They're walking on either side of the track and they're trying to kill each other.
They have silencers.
Yeah, they have silencers. Yes. Yeah. It's just, and then of course it spreads out and then everybody knows there's a fight on the subway.
That's my only thing that I don't really like about this film.
What's that?
Is that sometimes the bystanders are not reacting to how they should.
Well, at least they ultimately do.
They did, but in the beginning when they're starting to sort of kill each other inside the subway car, there are ways to get out of that car.
Yeah.
They didn't have to stay.
I didn't notice that, because I did notice a couple of people were just kind of paralyzed with fear.
Right.
So they didn't move, so I was able to. So here's the situation with John Wick 2. The reason that I don't love it, although I'm getting to the point where I am beginning to love it.
Okay.
Because last night I said it was really good, but I didn't love it. So was that it's too much. It's 2 hours with 90 minutes of action. So it's brutal. So after a while, about when he comes back, he starts in New York, he goes to Rome, he comes back to New York, and then there's a Matrix reunion in this movie with Lawrence Fishburne plays a wonderful part. There's a lot of wonderful, delightful surprises and fun stuff that I really, really enjoyed. There's an homage to Enter the Dragon.
Yes.
One of the penultimate climactic battle is in a Hall of Mirrors. That's very cleverly done. And individually, every one of those fight scenes, I think, is a textbook. They're not kung fu. They're clearly not kung fu. Nobody thinks outside the box. Nobody does anything clever or inventive. They're just brutalizing each other, but they're brutalizing each other in a really cool way.
Really cool way. John Wick was very efficient. That's how
he was somewhat efficient.
He was efficient
for a person who wants to die.
Right.
He's not a person who wants to win. He just wants to fight.
And I have to mention this. I really love an action film where the bullet runs out. And the hero.
Oh my gosh, that was great. I have to admit that was great too.
We've seen so many action films.
Yeah.
None of the bullets went out, and then when a character gets stabbed in the leg or hits in the shoulder,
it disappears in the next scene.
But this one, it was consistent. He was shot in the stomach. He was stabbed on the left leg, and he was limping, and it was hurting on his stomach. His acting was consistent throughout the film.
Yeah, the makeup was consistent.
The gun, and the reloading scenes were fantastic.
I almost enjoyed as much as Jackie Chan's encyclopedia of gun disarming scenes. You could do a supercut of Jackie disarming people of guns, which is awesome. But you could also do a supercut of John Wick and the rest of the cast reloading. It was awesome.
There's one part that I love the most when he fights with Cassian, and they were going hand in hand combat pretty much, and he was still trying to use his gun to shoot him.
Yeah.
And then there's one point where he's kind of locked onto the ground, and he was able to stick a magazine between his legs, so he was able, because he only had one hand free. He was able to use that magazine, and he uses the magazine between his legs to reload, and was able to shoot again. That was inventive.
It was very inventive. That's what I'm saying. Basically, if you watch, I said afterward the movie last night that I was not going to buy the DVD of this. Mm-hmm. I am going to buy the DVD of this, and I'm going to. And what I recommend is that you have like a quadruple or whatever the word is for a dozen feature. Mm-hmm. You watch the fights individually, because what happens in this movie, 2 hours long, by the end of it, I felt beat up. I really couldn't enjoy it as much as I wanted to, because I call this thing the top secret of action films. Now, Top Secret is a comedy by the Zucker brothers, which they did after they did Airplane and several others. And it was always, and many people consider it the Zucker brothers' best comedy. But the reason the Zucker brothers themselves and other critics thought it didn't work is it was too many jokes. They did not pause for characters or plots. Everything was joke-oriented. So by the end of it, you felt like you were just hit in the face with a fish repeatedly, because you couldn't enjoy the humor, because all it was humor.
Right.
There was nothing that balanced it. There was nothing that let you take a breath.
Right.
And John Wick, Chapter 2, I felt that way. In other words,
which is kind of strange.
They should have saved a couple of those fight scenes for the third one.
Right.
I understand that they thought maybe they wouldn't get a third one, so why not go for the moon?
I appreciate that.
But as a audience member, it would have been a great movie had they said, all right, let's structure this a little better so this final fight has more meaning than it does now.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why. I love it at the beginning when they have the fight right from the start.
Right.
But there's a lot of times where he paused. There's a lot of slowdowns in between big fights.
Yeah.
But all of those big fights have the same intensity.
Yes, exactly.
And they're all great.
Yeah.
They're not any less, but they're all great. But they're all the same intensity.
But they don't build.
They don't build up.
No.
So you feel tired at the end because you're engaged the whole time.
Yeah.
So I do feel like that's kind of a weird balance that they have to find maybe with the next one.
Well, they're 100% better than they were in the first one. So maybe the third one, if there is a third one, hopefully there will be, because it's done apparently pretty good so far. It still can't beat Lego Batman at the box office.
No,
but
nobody can beat Lego Batman.
But hopefully they didn't spend too much money on this. On the supplementals, I'll try to find out what the budget of this was, and then we'll see if they'll have another one. But anyway, Jen, come back so you can say goodbye. Jen left it because she didn't want to go see John Wick 2, and she didn't want to stay here while Miko and I talked about it.
Because I was like, thought I would say something about why I didn't want to see it, but I kind of just felt like it's just not a type of movie that I'm interested in.
I gotcha.
I kind of felt like that was really it.
So let me just very quickly say that people have asked me what my opinion is of the preview of Iron Fist, the new Netflix show, and they've released a couple of the fight scenes to pump up the promotion. It's going to just be dumped on Netflix in the middle of March. I've seen a fight scene featuring Jessica Henwick, who plays Colleen, the co-starring character, and all I can tell you is that I don't have great hopes, because the fight scene they showed with poor Jessica was really awful. I mean, this is a really bad fight scene. They have this thin, tiny little girl fighting these big bruisers in a MMA kind of octagon, and her fighting is terrible. Her fighting is weak. There's not a single kick or punch she does that you believe has any more power than a wet noodle with. She's also acting with virtually no energy at all. I mean,
she's also not fighting to her strength.
No, she's fighting like the men. Right. You know, she's this tiny little thin, you know, anorexic girl fighting these huge bruisers, and she's fighting exactly the way they're fighting, but ineffectively and unconvincingly. She's going ha 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 ha, and she's kicking and grabbing, and you can see in her grip is loose. Her grip is loose. It wouldn't keep these guys at all. A friend of mine was a great expert on samurai movies, and he always said, look at the swordsmen in the samurai movies, like Son of Black Mass and Zatoichi and Seven Samurai, and you see these guys are really holding the sword, and they're really using an enormous amount of strength and energy. And as an actor, you need to have energy in order to be an effective actor. There's a wonderful Ip Man, you know, not IP Man, but there's a great Ip Man movie called Ip Man Final Fight, which stars a guy named Anthony Wong, who's an award-winning actor. He's not a martial artist. He's not a kung fu guy, but he's completely and utterly convincing in the wing.
When he's older.
Because
he's not Donnie Yen.
Oh. Quiet,
Jen,
you.
Jen's a big fan of
yes.
Donnie
Yen. Well, that's why she went to XXX. But in any that's case, true. But the return of Xander Cage. But in any case, Anthony Wong was awesome in the role because he's a great actor. So he used his energy. And Jessica's not using any energy. It's a totally unconvincing, poorly done fight. The fight choreographer is Brett Chan, who was a stunt coordinator on Marco Polo. The fight coordinators are Hiro Minami, who was a stuntman until Iron Fist, Shane Yan, who was a stuntman until Iron Fist, and Malay Kim, who does stuff in Malaysia, I believe. His last film was called Female Fight Club. So we have a couple of novices, and all they're doing, apparently on the basis of the fight scene with Jessica Hardwick, is trying to copy Tony Jaa movies. But doing it with an anorexic girl, or seemingly anorexic girl, who has no energy.
Because I did see the trailer. It was bad.
It was very bad.
It was very bad.
So I'm really worried. We'll see it, and then we'll talk about it. But for you, for those of you out there who have been asking me about it, that's my opinion. And now, we will wrap up this, our Valentine's Day Massacre episode. I want to thank our wonderful audience here. You guys were great. Make noise. Thank you, thank you. I'll listen to that. That's wonderful. And, of course, for Miko Mai and Jen Hurler,
yes,
we're all going to do our sign-off. Are you ready, everybody? 1, 2, 3. Use your blinkers, jackass.
Okay, break it up. Break it up. For now.
You don't give up, do you?
Listen in next time for more film fun, frenzy, and friends. Until then, check out actionfilmautopsy.com, where the excitement never ends.
Solid victory.